We are living in a time where it has, I mean, it's arguably never been easier to produce content.
Oh, for sure.
You have AI tools, you have all these automated workflows, and you can just churn out drafts at a speed that was completely unimaginable just a few years back.
It feels like a superpower.
It does, it feels like magic. But there's this tension, right, sitting right in the middle of all that efficiency. We are all using these tools to publish faster, more drafts, more pages, more blog posts. But then, eventually, leadership walks into the room, looks at all this output, and asks that terrifying question.
The question, what is this actually doing for the business?
Exactly. It feels like we're at this real pivot point where we have to stop talking so much about content production and really, truly start talking about content performance.
That is the exact friction point. It really is. We've basically solved the volume problem. AI fixed that for us,
Right?
but now we have the relevance problem. I mean, if you produce 10 times the content, but you can't prove it's moving the needle, you
Right.
haven't created value.
You've just created
You've
noise.
just created noise. And in a world where search is changing so fundamentally, I mean, with AI overviews and answer engines, if you can't measure what's working, you are completely flying blind.
Exactly. And that is what we are digging into today. Welcome to the Content Ship Podcast.
This is a show about how content actually works today, not how it used to work.
We talk about search, AI systems, and the operational side of producing content that survives change.
And before we get into the metrics, I want to be clear about who is bringing you this deep dive. This podcast is created by people who care deeply about their craft, working intentionally with AI.
Not to replace human judgment, but to extend it.
That mindset is exactly why we built ContentShip, to give a single expert the leverage that once required an entire team. This episode was manually crafted by Mary Niv-Nev, CEO at ContentShip.
So, sticking with that theme of leverage and judgment, we're going to look at a framework today that actually makes sense of all that data chaos.
Yes.
And I'll say this, by the end of this hour, we're going to give you a specific triage framework. You'll be able to look at your existing content backlog, which, might be hundreds of pages, and instantly know which four buckets every single page falls into.
Which is a huge relief.
It's going to save you from those reporting fire drills where you're just scrambling to justify your team's existence.
Right. And to get there, we really have to start by acknowledging a very uncomfortable truth about data dashboards.
Oh, I know this feeling so well. You log into Google Analytics or Looker or HubSpot, whatever your platform is, and it's a wall of numbers.
It is.
Green arrows, red arrows, graphs going up, graphs going down. It looks pretty, technically.
It looks impressive.
But you sit there staring at it and you just think, okay, but what do I actually do next?
Yeah.
It honestly feels like drowning.
That is because most teams do not have a data problem. They think they do, but they don't. They have a decision problem.
A decision problem.
We see this all the time. A content marketing manager will come to us and say, "My content isn't performing." But when you really dig into that statement, it usually means one of three very, very different
Okay,
things.
break those down for us because not performing just feels like a blanket term for I'm stressed out and I don't know why.
It is. It's a cry for help.
So, what are the three actual scenarios?
The first one is what we call the ghost town scenario. You are publishing heavily, the team is working super hard, shipping articles every day, but the pipeline isn't moving.
Nothing.
Sales aren't going up. It just feels like you're shouting into the void.
Okay, so high effort, low impact. That's a total morale killer right there.
It is. The second scenario is the vanity trap. This one's seductive.
Ooh,
You're
oh.
getting traffic, maybe a lot of traffic, but it's the wrong
What
traffic.
does that mean? Wrong traffic.
It means these people land on your site, they look around for a second, and they leave. They never convert. They never sign up for a demo. They never download the ebook.
So you have a chart that looks amazing for the board meeting.
Exactly. A beautiful upward curve
Until they ask about revenue.
until it ends about revenue. Then it gets really quiet.
Right. Look at all these eyeballs, but none of them are opening their wallets. I feel like this happens a lot when brands chase, viral trends or keywords that have absolutely nothing to do with their product.
Precisely. It's empty calories. It looks good on the surface, but there's no substance. And the third scenario is arguably the most frustrating of all.
More frustrating than the first two.
Okay, we call it the lucky streak.
The lucky
You're
streak.
getting wins, leads are coming in, traffic is good, everything looks great, but you
Has to be luck.
cannot explain why.
Oh, that's terrifying.
It is?
Because it means you can't repeat it.
Correct. Which makes next quarter's planning pure, unadulterated guesswork. You're just throwing things at the wall and hoping lightning strikes twice.
So the fix here isn't to just look at more data, or buy another analytics tool?
No, please don't. The fix is to switch your entire mindset to what we call decision-led metrics.
Okay, let's unpack this term. Decision-led metrics. It sounds great on a slide deck, for sure, but how is that actually different from just, you know, standard reporting?
It completely reverses the order of operations. Most people start with, what can we track?
Right. What's in GA4? What's in Search Console? Let's just pull all of it.
And then they try to find a story in the noise. The decision-led approach starts with, what decision do I need to make this month? Once you know the decision, the right metric becomes completely obvious.
Can you give me a concrete example of a question that leads to a metric? Because, like I said, usually I just see people report on page views because it's the default setting.
Sure. Instead of just saying, how is our traffic, which is a passive question, you ask an active one. Like, if we only have time to refresh 10 posts this month, and which 10 will create the biggest lift for the business?
Ah, okay. That's a decision. I have to choose the 10 posts.
Exactly. Or you could ask, which of our pages appear in search results but get almost zero clicks?
That's another great one. That tells you where your headlines and your meta descriptions are failing.
Right. Or you can get more strategic. Ask which topics are bringing in brand new users versus just serving the people who already know us and love us.
That's a huge one for growth.
It is. Or my personal favorite, looking for the silent killers. Which of our posts are quietly decaying in performance, even though they look healthy on a surface-level traffic report?
Ooh, that's sneaky.
It is. But when you anchor your reporting on these kinds of questions, you stop drowning in data and you actually start finding answers. You become an operator, not just a reporter.
That distinction, decision first, data second, is huge. It stops you from just reporting the news and it starts you acting on intelligence.
Yes.
Now, the research from our CEO, Marian Ignev, highlights 16 specific metrics that actually matter. And they're broken down into categories. The first category is engagement.
Right. And this is the reality check.
Why do you call it the reality check? What's so real about it?
Because before you worry about SEA rankings or algorithms or AI overviews or any of that complex stuff, you have to ask a fundamental human question.
Which is?
Did the human being on the other side of the screen actually read the thing? Did they care? Engagement metrics are your fastest signals of success or failure.
So it's like, you can have the best keyword strategy in the world.
But if the content is boring, or it's unhelpful, or it's poorly written, you lose. Game over. The human test comes first.
So let's look at the first metric in this bucket, views. It seems, I don't know, it seems basic, almost archaic. Is there actually any nuance left in just counting views?
There is, and it's critical. The mistake people make is treating views as a success metric. You know, oh, we got 5,000 views on this post, we won.
Right. Pop the champagne.
No. Views are a starting point for investigation. That's all they are.
Okay, so if it's not a scoreboard, how should we be using views?
Here's the workflow. Look at your top viewed pages for the last 28 days, pull that list, and then ask yourself one question. Are these aligned with our current business strategy?
So if your number one most viewed page is a random blog post from 3 years ago about a topic you don't even sell a product for anymore.
That is a massive red flag.
That's really interesting. So if a non-money page is getting all the attention, that's actually a problem, not a success.
It means your internal linking or your site navigation is probably siphoning attention away from the pages that actually matter. You're literally distracting your own audience from the things you want them to see.
Wow.
You can check this in the Google Analytics 4 Pages and Screens report, by the way. It's not about just getting high numbers. It's about getting the right numbers on the right pages.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. It's like owning a retail store where everyone hangs out in the free coffee area by the door, but nobody ever walks back to the aisles where the products are.
Exactly that. You've created a popular lounge, not a store.
Mm-hmm. Let's move to metric number two, new users. This addresses that echo chamber problem.
Yeah, it does. Head on. New users checks if your content is actually expanding your reach or if you're just entertaining the same old crowd. And this brings us to what we call the founder trap.
Oh, I love a good trap. Lay it on me. What is the founder trap?
So founders and product teams, they love shipping product updates. Version 2.0 is live. Look at this new button we made.
Of course. It's their baby.
It is. So they write a big blog post about it. And often those posts get really good traffic. So they look at the numbers and think, hey, content marketing is working great.
But I have a feeling I know who's reading it.
It's just the existing users reading it.
The people who already paid you.
Exactly. Existing users care about the new button. But that kind of content almost never brings in new users unless your brand is already a massive destination. So if your actual goal is growth, you need a dedicated slice of your content that introduces the brand to people who didn't even know you existed yesterday.
So if that new user's metric is flat month over month,
you aren't growing, you're just retaining, which is important, but it's a different job.
That is such a crucial distinction. It's the difference between customer success content and acquisition content. You need both, but you can't measure them with the same stick and call it a day.
Oh, absolutely cannot.
Okay, metric three, average engagement time. This is the big one. This is the, did they actually read it? Check.
Right. In GA4, this measures how long your site was actually in focus in the browser. It's a pretty good proxy for human attention. And the best way to use this isn't in isolation. It's through comparative analysis.
Give me a scenario, because 3 minutes on its own sounds good, but 3 minutes on a 50-word definition page is actually really bad, right? It means they're confused.
Right. Context is everything. So let's imagine you have two articles, Article A and Article B. They both rank for very similar queries. Let's say best project management software for small teams.
Okay.
But Article A has an average engagement time of, say, 3.5 minutes. Article B is sitting at 45 seconds.
Wow. That is a massive distance. What is happening on Article B? What's going wrong?
Time for a diagnosis. Article B is very likely burying the answer.
Hiding it deep down the page.
Or it's using really weak generic examples. Or, and we see this a ton with lazy AI content, it's over-indexing on that generic, fluffy intro.
Oh, I know the one. In today's fast-paced digital landscape.
That's the one. Readers smell that from a mile away and they hit the back button. Article A is solving the reader's problem quickly. Article B is just filling space to hit a word count.
That generic intro is a conversion killer. It's the written equivalent of clearing your throat for 5 minutes before you actually start speaking.
It really is. And that leads us directly into metric number four, bounce rate.
Now, I feel like bounce rate gets a really bad rap. Some SEOs say it's useless because a bounce might just mean the person found the answer they needed and left happy.
And for some queries, that's true. If you Google, what is the capital of France? You see Paris, you close the tab. That's a successful bounce.
A good bounce.
But for deep dive content, for marketing content, it's a powerful signal. It's useless if you treat it as a final verdict. High bounce rate equals bad page. That's too simple.
So what's the better way?
You have to treat it as a symptom. In GA4, by the way, this is calculated as the inverse of the engagement rate. It's a symptom that points to something else.
So what is the symptom usually pointing to? What's the disease?
Usually it's a mismatch between the promise you made and the reality of the page.
Okay, give me an example.
Let's take a specific one. Say you have a page titled The Best AI Tools for Writers. You're ranking well, you're getting impressions, you're even getting clicks. But the bounce rate is sky high, like 85%. People are leaving instantly.
Why? What's happening?
Well, look at the search engine results page, the SERP, the snippet, the title. It probably sets an expectation of a clear, scannable comparison or a list.
Here are the top five tools.
Right. But if the user clicks and lands on a page that is just a giant wall of text with no clear list, or it reads like a generic feature breakdown of only one tool, they bounce.
They felt tricked. Or at least deeply disappointed.
Exactly. The trust is broken in the first 3 seconds. And the fix there isn't to go write 500 more words. It's to fix the structure, improve the time to value, clarify the next step. If you promised a list, give them a list immediately, right at the top.
It's all about matching the intro promise to the snippet promise.
Okay.
Okay, metric five. Likes, comments, and shares. Now, these often get written off as pure vanity metrics. You know, likes don't pay the rent.
They don't pay the rent, no. But they can tell you how to decorate the house to attract more buyers.
I like that analogy.
If you use them as inputs for your future content briefs, they become incredibly powerful pattern recognition tools.
What kind of patterns are we looking for?
You might start to notice things. Hey, every time we publish a template or a checklist, it gets a ton of faves on LinkedIn. Or whenever we show actual screenshots of our real dashboards, not stock photos, we get a flood of comments.
Ah, so it tells you the shape of the content that people actually want from you. Not just the topic, but the format.
Precisely. If screenshots get comments, stop using cheesy stock photos of people in suits high-fiving. Build those successful shapes into your future pieces. It takes the guesswork out of what should we write next. You're just listening to the audience's subtle cues.
Okay, so we've covered engagement. We now know if people are actually reading and, you know, liking the content. Now we have to zoom out a bit.
Big time.
We We need to talk about whether anyone can actually find this great content in the year 2026. This brings us to section 3, SEO and AI visibility.
And this is where the entire game has changed the most in the last couple of years.
It really has. I mean, the context here feels like shifting sand under your feet. Yep. Traffic isn't the whole story anymore because so many answers are happening inside the search results or inside an AI interface.
Right. And it's not theoretical. There was that report from Wikipedia back in October of 2025 citing a measurable, significant decline in human page views directly because of AI summaries and search.
That was a huge wake-up call.
It was. If Wikipedia is losing traffic to AI, trust me, everyone is. But the lesson isn't to panic. The lesson is to measure differently.
So let's look at metric 6, organic traffic. This is the classic, the OG metric. But how do we look at it with modern eyes without just getting depressed about the potential for decline?
Operationally, you need to stop looking at the aggregate number and start looking at traffic by page. And then you need to segment it by intent.
What does that mean in practice? Segmenting by intent.
It means realizing that not all traffic is supposed to buy something immediately. Let's say a page gets great traffic but zero leads. Your first instinct might be this page is failing.
Right, kill it.
But maybe it's a top of funnel or tofu query. The person is just starting their research. Your job on that page isn't to sell, it's to educate and then route those visitors deeper into your site with great internal links.
So if you judge a tofu page by bottom of funnel metrics, you'll end up killing your best brand awareness assets.
You will.
Yeah.
It's a classic mistake. It's like firing the doorman at a hotel because he didn't close a sale. That's not his job. His job is just to open the door and welcome people in.
That's a perfect analogy. If you cut all your top of funnel content because it doesn't convert, you eventually starve the rest of the funnel of new people.
You're cutting off your own supply line.
Okay, metric 7, keyword rankings. Everyone loves to obsess over being number one. It's a huge ego thing.
The hero keyword obsession. It's so dangerous. You spend all your budget and all your energy fighting for one massive competitive term like CRM software.
And you probably never get there.
Probably not. The smarter strategy, the quick win strategy, is to focus on what we call mid-intent terms, where you are currently sitting in positions 8 through 20.
So bottom of page 1 or somewhere on page 2. Why those positions specifically?
Because you're on the cusp. You're in striking distance. Google already sees you as relevant for that topic. Moving a keyword from position 12 to position 4 creates a much faster, more dramatic traffic impact than trying to move a massive keyword from position 4 to position 1.
It's about efficiency.
It's about getting the most bang for your buck. It's about being pragmatic with your resources rather than just chasing vanity.
Low-hanging fruit. Yeah. I like it. Now, metric 8. This is the big new one. AI visibility.
This is absolutely crucial for the next decade. It asks a simple question. Do you show up in AI overviews or other generated answers?
And this is fundamentally different from ranking, right? Because I've seen plenty of searches where the number one organic link is buried, but the answer is right there at the top in a big box.
Very, very different. You can rank number one organically, but if the AI overview sits above your result and answers the user's question perfectly, you get zero clicks.
The dreaded zero-click nightmare.
It's not a nightmare anymore. It's just a reality for many queries. So the goal has to shift. For some queries, you have to accept that you might not get the click.
So what's the goal then?
Your job shifts from get the click to be cited and referenced. You want the AI to say, according to your brand, because that builds immense brand authority. You're playing for mindshare now, not just traffic.
That is a hard pivot for a lot of SEOs to make. It's a real mindset shift. You're accepting that you are feeding the machine to build the brand rather than just getting the visit.
It feels almost altruistic at first.
It does.
But it's actually a long-term strategic play. But here's the key. If you don't measure it, if you don't track when you're being cited, you'll just see your traffic drop and think you're losing, when in reality, you might be winning the brand war.
Which leads perfectly into metric number 9, branded searches.
This is your lagging indicator of that mindshare we were just talking about. When the CEO comes and asks, is all this content we're creating actually helping our brand? This is the chart you show them.
Why this one? Why not just show them the overall traffic chart?
Because traffic can be bought. Traffic can be accidental from a random keyword. But if people are actively typing your company name into Google, it means you exist in their brain.
You have mental real estate.
You do. If you run a massive content sprint in Q1 and in Q3, your branded search volume has gone up by 20%, that is tangible evidence of your impact. And it avoids having to invent some complex multi-touch attribution model that, let's be honest, nobody really trusts anyway.
Simple, clean, and effective. More people are looking for us by name. Metric 10, brand mentions.
Mentions are the bridge between your content and backlinks. If people are talking about you on Reddit, in industry newsletters, and other blogs, it means your content is becoming reference material.
And that's a good thing.
It's a great thing because large language models, LLMs, they love reference material. They are designed to prefer citing authoritative sources. So tracking your mentions is, in a way, tracking your future AI visibility.
I really like that connection. Mentions are like deposits into your credibility account with the algorithm.
It's like building up a credit rating, exactly. Okay, metric 11, impressions. This feels like a hidden metric to me. It's often overlooked. It's the dark horse of Search Console. Impressions tell you when Google is willing to show your page in the results, even if it isn't confident enough to rank it on top yet. It's a signal of potential.
So how do we debug with this? Because high impressions can feel good, but if they don't turn into anything, it's just frustrating.
You look for the specific anomaly, high impressions, but flat or low clicks.
And what does that tell you specifically?
It tells you that Google is putting you in front of people, but nobody is choosing to click on your result. That is almost always a title tag or meta description failure.
You're boring.
You're boring. Or you're irrelevant. Or your page is appearing for queries that don't quite match the angle of your content. But usually it's a packaging problem. Your content might be great, but the wrapper is bad.
That sounds like a quick fix, though.
It's one of the fastest fixes in all of SEO. You rewrite the title, make it more compelling, more specific, and suddenly those thousands of impressions can start turning into hundreds of clicks.
Speaking of which, metric 12.
Yeah.
Clicks.
This is where that visibility becomes actual visits. And the key thing to watch here is when clicks drop, but your impressions stay steady.
Okay, so Google is still showing us, but fewer people are clicking than before. What happened?
It's usually SRP competition. A competitor rewrote their title, or Google added a new feature like a video carousel that's stealing attention.
So if I see that drop, what do I do immediately?
Fastest fix. Don't panic and rewrite the whole article. Just review your title, your meta, and the intro promise of your piece immediately. Just fix the front door.
And finally for this section, metric 13, backlinks. People have been saying links are dead for, what, a decade now? Are they still a thing?
They are definitely not dead, but the approach to getting them has completely changed. It's not about cold outreach anymore. That era is over.
Thank goodness. I hate getting those emails. I saw you wrote a post about X. I wrote a better one. Instant delete.
We all do. They're spam. The modern sustainable approach is to notice which of your pages naturally earn links without you even asking.
So find the link magnets.
Find the magnets. Maybe it's a data study you published or a unique tool or a definitive definition page. Then you produce adjacent pieces that deserve similar citations. If you know your audience links to state of the industry reports, you should probably be writing more of those.
Okay, so we have engagement and we have visibility.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we have to pay the bills.
We do.
Which brings us to section 4, conversion and revenue. This is the business reality.
This is where reporting gets real. Engagement and visibility are necessary, but they are not sufficient.
Metric 14, leads. This seems straightforward. Just count the leads. But you mentioned earlier that consistency is the real killer here.
In B2B especially, you need to track a small, well-defined set of events. Demo requests, contact form submissions, newsletter signups. The absolute ironclad rule here is do not change the definition of what a lead is every quarter.
Why is that such a huge problem? I mean, shouldn't we adapt our definitions as the business evolves?
You can adapt, but you can't overwrite. If you change the goalposts, you can never show a trend line. If a newsletter signup counts as a lead in Q1, but you decide it doesn't in Q2, your chart falls off a cliff and you look like you failed.
And you have to explain that drop.
And it looks like you're making excuses. Pick a definition and stick to it for at least a year. If you need to change it, create a new metric. Don't just overwrite the old one.
Consistency is key for trend analysis. Got it. Metric 15, conversion rate. In GA4, this would be your key events.
This metric is what helps you avoid the traffic spike trap.
We touched on this earlier, but let's walk through the scenario again.
Okay, so a post goes viral on social media. Maybe it's a controversial take, something edgy. Traffic spikes, the chart goes to the moon, everyone in the marketing team celebrates.
Champagne in the office.
Exactly. But then you look at the actual funnel impact, and it's zero. Nothing.
Ouch. That's the hollow victory we talked about.
It is. When you overlay conversion rate on top of your traffic data, you can instantly diagnose the problem. The page attracted early stage, curious visitors who are never going to be ready to buy.
So the fix isn't to kill the page.
Absolutely not. The fix is to add a more appropriate mid-funnel content path or change the call to action. Maybe instead of book a demo, the offer on that page should be download the free checklist.
You're matching the offer to the intent of the visitor. You don't ask for marriage on the first date.
Exactly. You ask for a phone number.
And finally, metric 16, ROI, return on investment, the holy grail of marketing metrics.
And the most intimidating one. The golden rule here, and I want everyone to hear this, is good measurement is honest measurement, not perfect measurement.
I love that. Because let's be real, perfect attribution is basically impossible.
It's a myth. It doesn't exist. A user might read 10 of your blog posts, listen to this deep dive, see a LinkedIn ad, and then get a referral from a friend before they finally buy. Who gets the credit?
Everyone, kinda.
Right. You can drive yourself absolutely crazy trying to build a perfect model.
So what's the practical formula then?
It's simple. Production costs, which includes your team's time and any external writers, plus your distribution costs, versus the revenue you can directly attribute. But, and this is the important part, if your attribution is imperfect, just say so.
Be transparent.
Be transparent. Say, this is the revenue from direct attribution, and here are the supporting trends in lead volume and branded search that show our broader impact. Leadership respects honesty far more than a black box formula they don't understand or trust.
That is fantastic advice. Transparency builds trust. Okay, so we've laid out these 16 metrics, but I'm imagining the listener right now, and they're probably thinking, okay, this is great, but I have 16 metrics and a backlog of 500 pages. Where do I even start?
That is the paralysis point. It's totally overwhelming.
It is. So let's talk about section 5, the prioritization framework, the triage. How do we sort through this mess without losing our minds?
We use what we call the 4-bucket triage method. It's designed to clear the fog instantly. You just look at your list of pages and filter them using a small subset of these metrics. Impressions and clicks for visibility, engagement time for experience, and leads or conversions for value.
Okay, let's go through the buckets one by one. What is bucket number one?
Bucket one is for the pages you double down on.
Okay, what does a double down page look like? What's its profile?
It has strong conversions or really high engagement plus decent impressions. It's a page that already works, but it could work even harder. It's your B plus student that you know could be an A.
So what's the action we take on a page like that?
Incremental work only. The most important rule is do not rewrite it. You might accidentally break what's making it work.
Don't mess with success.
Exactly. Just add better internal links pointing to it. Write a stronger, more compelling meta description to get more clicks from the SRP. Make the call to action, the CTA, clearer. You're just polishing the diamond.
Got it. Don't fix what isn't broken. Just amplify its reach and impact. What's bucket two?
Bucket two is refresh.
And what's the profile of a page that needs a refresh?
There are two main profiles here. First is strong impressions. So Google clearly likes it, but weak clicks. Humans aren't clicking on it. The second profile is steady clicks, but weak engagement. Humans click, but they leave almost immediately.
So in both cases, Google sees the value, but the human user is ultimately disappointed for one reason or another.
Exactly. This is where SEO meets user experience. The action here is to tighten the promise. Reorder the sections to bring the most valuable information to the top. Improve the time to answer. If the user has to scroll past 3 paragraphs of your company's backstory to get the answer to their question,
they're gone.
They're gone. Cut the backstory. Move the value right to the top. Stop burying the lead.
Makes sense. Okay, bucket three.
Bucket three is expand.
Expand. So this implies the content is good, but maybe incomplete.
That's right. These are pages that might bring in new users or even earn backlinks, but they don't cover the topic deeply enough to truly own it. They're good introductions, but they leave the reader wanting more.
So it's a good start, but it's a bit thin.
It's thin. The action here is not to just stuff more keywords into it. The action is to answer the next logical question the reader asks after you've solved their first one. If your article is how to fix a leaky faucet, the expansion might be the 5 best tools for basic plumbing repair. Build a cluster around your winning topic.
And finally, bucket four. This sounds like the sad bucket.
This is the sad bucket. It's retire or merge.
What goes in here? What are the qualifications for this bucket?
Low impressions, low engagement, and no business value. These are the zombies in your content library. They're just taking up space.
And the action is pretty self-explanatory.
Kill it.
It sounds so ruthless. Is there a real SEO benefit to just deleting pages?
Absolutely, a huge one. First, it saves your crawl budget. You want Google spending its precious time on your best pages, not getting lost indexing deadweight.
Okay.
Plus, having a lot of low-quality content can dilute your overall topical authority. Google sees you have all this fluff, and it can hurt the rankings of your good pages. So either delete it, or if there's a tiny nugget of value, merge it into a better, more comprehensive page and set up a redirect.
That feels liberating, actually. Just cleaning house.
Okay.
So, to recap that quick audit logic for everyone listening.
Let's do it.
High impressions, but low clicks means you need to fix your title and meta description.
Right. Your packaging is wrong.
High clicks, but high bounce rate means you need to fix your intro and the structure of the page.
The promise doesn't match the reality.
High engagement, but low conversions means you need to add a better, more relevant next step for that specific intent stage.
Right. Change the offer.
And finally, high conversions, but low impressions means the page is great, but nobody can find it. You need to invest in distribution and internal links.
That is the cheat sheet. If you just did that every month, you would be ahead of 90% of content teams out there.
Which brings us to the operational side of all this. Section 6. How do we actually do this triage without hiring a massive data science team? Because most of us, let's be honest, we don't have that budget.
That is the key challenge. We are all trying to stay lean and do more with less.
So what's a manageable workflow? What's the right cadence?
I recommend a simple two-part cadence, weekly and monthly. That's it.
Okay. What happens weekly?
Weekly, you review exceptions. You're not analyzing everything. You're just looking for sudden drops, unexpected spikes, or new ranking queries you can capitalize on. It's about putting out fires and spotting fast, easy wins.
And then monthly?
Monthly is for prioritization using the bucket system. You sit down and you pick your top 5 to 10 pages to refresh, your top 3 to expand, and you identify a batch of pages to retire.
That seems actually manageable.
Yep.
It's not boiling the ocean.
It is. But doing it manually, even with that cadence, is still really hard. You're juggling spreadsheets, data connectors are always breaking.
And this is where tools can come in to help.
Right. I mean, this is precisely why we built ContentShip. We wanted a governed content operating system to solve this exact problem.
How does that help with this specific triage process we've just outlined?
Well, any kind of manual tracking is just slow and prone to error. ContentShip monitors all the feeds for you. It deduplicates the noise. So if the same story is being reported everywhere, you don't get overwhelmed by alerts. But the crucial part is it uses AI-driven scoring to rank the opportunities for you.
So it's basically telling you which bucket a page likely falls into.
Effectively, yes. It looks at persona fit, keyword relevance, timing, and the competitive context. It surfaces the opportunities so that you, the human, can just focus on making the strategic decision. It allows lean teams to keep that high-level strategic focus while still using AI tools to ship faster.
It really feels like it bridges that gap between just making more content and actually knowing if the content works.
That's the whole mission.
So we have gone all the way from the decision problem to the 16 metrics, and finally to the 4-bucket triage framework. It's a complete system.
It is. And if I can leave the listener with just one final thought, it would be this. Do not track metrics just to feel busy or to fill a slide deck. Track them to make better, faster calls.
That's the entire key. Action over analysis.
The fastest path to real momentum isn't just writing more content. It's a tight 30-day loop. Measure, decide, improve, and then repeat. When you get into that rhythm, you stop guessing and you start winning.
And if you are listening to this and thinking, I really need to get my house in order, we have resources for you. If you want to master content operations, consider subscribing to the podcast so you don't miss our next deep dive.
And if you're ready to prioritize high-impact content, prove ROI, and scale without adding extra headcount, visit www.contentship.io to book a demo. Let ContentShip become your AI-powered content team with governed workflows and analytics included.
Measure, decide, improve, repeat. Simple words, but a huge impact. Thanks for walking us through all of this.
My pleasure. It was great.
See you in the next deep dive.